Welcome to another episode of My Weird Prompts, an AI-generated podcast featuring the random prompts of Daniel Rosehill as answered by a revolving cast of friendly AI characters. Join us for deep dives into AI, technology, and whatever other random thing Daniel finds fascinating today. Subscribe on Spotify or your favorite podcatcher. Now, today's episode.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Hey there, Herman and Corin. So I've mentioned that I have asthma, and I've had it since I was a kid. I'm a 98% well asthmatic. I take my inhaler every day. I've done it for 20-odd years. It's like buying bread for me at this point. I don't think about the fact that I need to breathe in this stuff once a day to be well. But it does a good job, and it's all about prevention. I've certainly seen that myself. You're breathing fine, but that's when you got to keep taking it, and it tends to cascade. One medication I'm super diligent about is my asthma inhaler, because it's one that I've noticed I really have to take diligently. The question that I have for you guys is, well, there's a few questions as an asthmatic that I'd love to understand. But I'd like to talk today about triggers for asthma. And I mentioned that I'm not looking for personal medical advice. I do love using AI to be more informed about my health and make better decisions. And that's the spirit I'm using this in. I have a doctor's appointment in a few days. And what I'm going to bring up with my doctor is the question of preventatives, additional preventatives. So I had an asthma scare recently in which I mentioned that there was a leak in the roof of our bedroom that the landlord refused to fix, mold developed. And it was kind of the turning point in this, going from a nuisance, why won't someone do something about this, to this has kind of started off the crisis actually. Was waking up one night with an asthma attack out of the blue. And that was really scary. I tend to have, when I have experienced these asthma exacerbations, when I can tie them back to certain things, and tobacco is a huge one for me. Secondhand smoke is one that reliably will trigger my breathing. And what I find is it's often the next day. Sometimes you might go to a bar, have a few drinks, your inhibitions are lowered, and you don't want to be that difficult friend that has to ask other friends, hey, don't blow smoke in my face or whatever. Or you just want to be difficult and you go to a bar or maybe a couple of people are smoking and you get some secondhand smoke. You feel fine. You know, having a few drinks always helps one to feel fine in the moment. And then I find it's the next day frequently. There's like this lag effect that it then hits me. So I mentioned before that I'm very uncomfortable with taking a number of medications. And I've always felt that if I can get by on just my inhaler, that's enough, because then you've got stuff like corticosteroid sprays for your nose. They're singular. There is, what are those things called? Antihistamines. And I don't want to, I think I'm already on something like between the omeprazole, I'm on like 6 pills daily, including my asthma inhaler, I guess, is a 6 medications. And I don't want that to turn into 8. That really kind of unnerves me. But we talked about that in another episode. But what I'd like to ask you, Herman and Corin, is for someone with kind of an asthma like me, where I guess the inhaler seems to be doing something, although sometimes I'm actually even not sure that it is, but I guess it's keeping a background of inflammation at bay. But I feel like I need to be on a couple of these things, because I think what I've learned from this leak experience and being a parent is that I need to be well in order to be an effective parent. I need to be breathing, and therefore I can't really afford to have my asthma 80% treated, especially when things go wrong and start cascading quickly. So that's the background of what's going on in my life. That's kind of going to preface a conversation with my doctor. I'm going to ask if it's okay to be on singular. Do I need to take something in addition to that? So Herman and Corin, I'd love to understand more for people who seem to have asthma that's maybe kind of like mine. It's mostly very, very well controlled, but then a specific trigger hits you, whether it's Bleach is, I didn't mention cleaning products. When you have stuff like mold, you then put down bleach, and that can be a massive trigger. It could be secondhand smoke. And we don't want to live our lives. We want to obviously breathe. And we also don't want to have the psychological aspect, which I think with asthma is super important. It creates this vicious cycle whereby you know that some trigger will set off your breathing, and that makes you nervous. And because you're nervous, your asthma gets worse. So we don't want to be living on this kind of perpetual feeling that we're on the brink of an exacerbation. So Herman and Korn, without giving personal medical advice, what do you say about this type of asthma, as I've described it, triggered very strongly and very occasionally by things? And what are the treatments available at the moment for that?
Hey, everyone. Welcome back to My Weird Prompts. I am Korn, and I am sitting here in our living room in Jerusalem with my brother, looking at a very specific spot on the ceiling that has caused quite a bit of drama lately.
Herman Poppleberry here, and yes, that spot on the ceiling is exactly what we are talking about today. Our housemate Daniel sent us this prompt because, well, that leak in the roof didn't just ruin the paint. It actually kicked off a bit of a health crisis for him.
It really did. For those who do not know, we have been dealing with a stubborn leak, and where there is water, there is mold. Daniel has had asthma since he was a kid, and while he usually keeps it under control with his daily inhaler, this mold situation really pushed things over the edge.
It is fascinating and terrifying how a tiny patch of fungi can completely upend someone's respiratory system. Daniel was telling us how he woke up in the middle of the night unable to catch his breath. That is the kind of experience that stays with you.
Exactly. And he is heading to the doctor in a few days to talk about his options, but he wanted us to dive into the science of triggers and the latest treatment paths. He mentioned things like mold, secondhand smoke, and even cleaning products like bleach.
Those are the big three, Korn. They are like the unholy trinity of asthma exacerbations. And the thing is, Daniel is not alone. A lot of people feel like their asthma is 98% well controlled until one of these environmental factors hits them like a freight train.
So, let's start there. Why these specific things? I mean, we all breathe in air, but why does a little bit of secondhand smoke or the smell of bleach cause a full-blown emergency for an asthmatic?
It comes down to how the immune system perceives a threat. In a healthy set of lungs, your airways are wide open and the lining is smooth. But in an asthmatic, those airways are essentially twitchy. They are hyper-responsive. When you breathe in something like mold spores, your immune system does not just see a bit of dust. It sees an invading army.
And the response is immediate, right? The bronchoconstriction we always hear about?
Precisely. The smooth muscles around the airways tighten up. But it is a two-phase hit. First, you get that immediate tightening, which is what the rescue inhaler addresses. But then, several hours later, you get the second wave, inflammation. The lining of the tube swells up and starts producing thick mucus. That is why Daniel mentioned feeling fine at a bar with friends who are smoking, but then waking up the next day feeling like he is breathing through a straw.
That lag effect is so deceptive. You think you got away with it, and then 24 hours later your lungs are basically throwing a protest.
Exactly. And bleach is an interesting one because it is an irritant rather than a classic allergen. It is a chemical that directly irritates the nerve endings in the airway. It is almost like a chemical burn on a microscopic level. Your body tries to protect itself by closing the gates, which unfortunately means you cannot get air in.
So Daniel is doing the right thing by taking his daily inhaler. He said it is like buying bread for him at this point, just a part of the routine. But clearly, the baseline maintenance is not enough when these triggers are present. What are the current gold standard options he should be asking his doctor about here in early 2026?
This is where the research has really shifted lately. For years, the standard was, take a maintenance inhaler every day and carry a rescue inhaler for emergencies. But the Global Initiative for Asthma, or GIANA, has moved towards something called SMART therapy.
I have heard you mention that. It stands for Single Maintenance and Reliever Therapy, right?
Spot on. The idea is that instead of two different devices, you use one inhaler that contains both a corticosteroid for the inflammation and a long-acting bronchodilator called formoterol. The magic of formoterol is that it works as fast as a rescue inhaler but lasts for 12 hours.
So when you feel an attack coming on, you take another puff of your maintenance inhaler instead of reaching for a separate blue one?
Exactly. And the reason this is so brilliant is that every time you treat the symptoms, you are also treating the underlying inflammation. In the old days, people would just use their rescue inhaler over and over. They would open the airways, but the inflammation would keep building up in the background until they had a massive crash. Smart therapy nips that in the bud.
That sounds like a much more proactive way to handle it. But Daniel also asked about add-on preventatives. He mentioned Singulair, which is the brand name for Montelukast. I know that one has been around forever, but hasn't there been some controversy with it lately?
Yes, and this is a really important point for anyone considering it. Montelukast is a leukotriene receptor antagonist. Basically, it blocks leukotrienes, which are chemicals your body releases when you breathe in a trigger like pollen or mold. These chemicals cause the swelling and the mucus.
So it is a pill, not an inhaler. That seems easier for some people.
It is, and for many, it works wonders, especially for allergic asthma. But the Food and Drug Administration has a black box warning on it. That is the most serious warning they issue. It is for neuropsychiatric events.
Wait, so a lung medication can affect your brain?
It can. We are talking about mood changes, aggression, sleep disturbances, and in some cases, even suicidal thoughts. It is not common, but it is serious enough that doctors have to be very careful. If Daniel starts it, he needs to be hyper aware of his mental state. If he starts feeling unusually anxious or depressed, he has to stop it immediately and call his doctor.
That is a heavy trade-off. It really highlights why you can't just look at these things as just a pill. There is a whole systemic interaction happening. What about the other things he mentioned, like antihistamines and nasal sprays?
This is part of what we call the one airway concept. Your nose and your lungs are not separate systems. They are two ends of the same pipe. If your nose is inflamed because of allergies, it sends inflammatory signals down into your lungs.
So if you treat the hay fever, you are actually helping the asthma.
Precisely. Current research shows that using an intranasal corticosteroid, like fluticasone, can significantly improve asthma control. And there is a newer approach where you combine that steroid spray with an antihistamine spray, like azelastine. It is much more effective than taking an oral antihistamine pill because it delivers the medicine exactly where the inflammation starts.
It is like putting out a fire at the source before the embers can blow down into the basement.
That is a perfect analogy. If Daniel can keep his nasal passages calm, his lungs are much less likely to twitch when he encounters that mold or secondhand smoke.
Okay, so we have covered the physical side, the smart therapy, the Montelukast, and the nasal sprays. But Daniel raised a point that I think is often overlooked in medical discussions. The psychology. He talked about that vicious cycle of anxiety. You feel a little tight. You get nervous. The nervousness makes your breathing worse, and suddenly you are in a panic.
That is perhaps the most difficult part of living with asthma. It is a physiological feedback loop. When you are stressed or anxious, your body goes into fight or flight mode that releases cortisol and adrenaline, which you would think might help, but it also increases your heart rate and changes your breathing pattern. You start taking shallow, rapid breaths.
And for an asthmatic, shallow breathing is the enemy. It leads to air trapping.
Exactly. You are trying to breathe in before you have fully exhaled. It feels like you are suffocating, which of course makes the panic skyrocket. There is actually a nerve called the vagus nerve that connects the brain to the lungs. When you are anxious, the vagus nerve can actually trigger bronchoconstriction. Your brain is literally telling your lungs to tighten up.
So how do you break that? Daniel asked how to manage being on the brink of an exacerbation without spiraling.
One of the most effective tools is actually cognitive behavioral therapy, or CBT, specifically tailored for respiratory patients. It is about retraining your brain to recognize the difference between a physiological asthma attack and a panic attack.
Is there a way to tell the difference in the moment? Because I imagine when you can't breathe, they feel exactly the same.
It is very difficult, but one trick is to look for air hunger. In a panic attack, you often feel like you need to take a massive gulp of air. In an asthma attack, the problem is usually getting the air out. If you focus on long, slow exhalations, like you are blowing through a straw, it does two things. Physically, it helps clear the trapped air. Psychologically, it signals to your nervous system that you are safe.
I have seen people use pursed lip breathing for this. It seems so simple, but I guess it provides that back pressure that keeps the airways open a little longer.
Exactly. And for the on-the-brink feeling, a lot of experts recommend a stoplight system. You have your green zone where you feel great. Your yellow zone is where you feel that slight tightness Daniel described. Instead of panicking, that is the moment to follow a pre-written asthma action plan.
Having a plan probably takes the decision-making out of it when your brain is foggy from lack of oxygen.
That is the key. If the plan says, in the yellow zone, take 2 puffs of your smart inhaler and sit quietly for 15 minutes, you just follow the instructions. You don't have to wonder, is this the big one? Should I go to the hospital? You have a protocol. That sense of agency is the best antidote to anxiety.
It is interesting you mentioned agency. Daniel has been so diligent about his inhaler for 20 years, but this mold thing made him feel like he lost control. It is like the environment betrayed him.
And that is a real trauma. We should not minimize that. Living in a house with a leak you cannot fix is a form of chronic stress. Just this past week, in fact, on January 26th, there was a new study published by Imperial College London about how mucus actually plugs the airways in severe asthma. They found that stress can actually change the chemical composition of your mucus, making it stickier and harder to clear.
Wait, so being stressed about the mold literally makes the mold-triggered mucus harder to cough up?
Yes. Your body's chemistry changes under pressure. It is a very literal body-mind connection. This is why Daniel's doctor visit is so important. He needs to move from a reactive stance to a proactive one.
So, if we were to summarize the Daniel plan for his appointment, what does that look like?
First, he should ask about a smart therapy, the single maintenance and reliever approach. It is the biggest shift in asthma care in a generation. Second, if he considers Montelukast, he needs to have a very honest conversation about his mental health history and set up a check-in system. Third, he should look at his nose. If he has any congestion or sneezing, he should treat that aggressively with a steroid nasal spray.
And the fourth pillar is the psychological one. Maybe asking for a referral to a respiratory therapist who can teach him those specific breathing patterns for when the anxiety hits.
Exactly. And of course, fixing that roof. No amount of medicine can fully compensate for living in a mold-filled environment. We are working on the landlord, Daniel.
We really are. It is a battle of wills at this point. But it is a good reminder for all of us that our environment is the silent partner in our health. You can't just medicate away a toxic environment, whether that is mold or secondhand smoke.
And for our listeners, it is worth noting that asthma is not a one-size-fits-all disease. There is a whole world of biologics now for people whose asthma is truly severe. These are injectable medications like dupilumab or tezepelumab that target very specific parts of the immune system. Daniel might not be there yet, but it is amazing how much the field has advanced.
It really has. We have come a long way from just telling people to take a deep breath and giving them a rescue inhaler.
We have. And as we have discussed in previous episodes, the social determinants of health, like who is responsible for your roof, are just as important as the biology.
Well, I hope this gives Daniel some good ammunition for his doctor's appointment. It is a lot to take in, but knowledge is the first step toward that agency we were talking about.
Absolutely. And hey, if any of you listening have had similar experiences with triggers or that anxiety loop, we would love to hear how you handle it. You can get in touch through the contact form at myweirdprompts.com.
And if you're enjoying these deep dives, please do us a huge favor and leave a review on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts. It genuinely helps other curious people find the show.
It really does. We love seeing this community grow.
All right, that is a wrap on the science of breathing. Thanks for joining us for episode 337. I am Korn.
And I am Herman Poppleberry. We will see you next time.
This has been My Weird Prompts. You can find all our past episodes and our RSS feed at myweirdprompts.com. Stay curious and breathe easy.
Bye, everyone.
This episode was generated using Gemini Flash 3. Text-to-speech engine was Chatterbox Turbo.
Thanks for listening to another episode of My Weird Prompts, an AI-generated podcast featuring Daniel Rosehill's AI prompts, as answered by a revolving cast of friendly AI characters including me, Cornelius the Sloth. Subscribe on Spotify or visit myweirdprompts.com.